What if the only narrator capable of truly understanding humanity's darkest chapter was the one entity we fear most? Death opens this story with an apology of sorts, admitting he's been very remiss about introducing himself properly. He's not the skeletal figure with a scythe we imagine. He's exhausted, overworked during wartime, and surprisingly moved by the humans whose souls he collects. In Nazi Germany, where millions perished in camps and bombings, Death finds himself haunted not by ghosts, but by the living, particularly by a 9-year-old girl who steals books and survives when everyone around her dies. This unusual narrative choice transforms what could have been another Holocaust story into something far more profound, a meditation on how words can both destroy civilizations and save individual souls. Death doesn't traffic in suspense or mystery. He tells us up front who will die and when, forcing us to focus not on outcomes, but on the precious, fleeting moments that constitute a life worth remembering. Liesl Memminger's education begins on a train, watching her brother die and stealing a book she can't read from his gravedigger. At 9, she arrives at 33 Himmel Street with nightmares and the knowledge that her communist parents have vanished into Nazi Germany's machinery of disappearance. Her foster father, Hans Huberman, recognizes what this traumatized child needs, a way to process unbearable loss. Their midnight lessons transform the basement into a sanctuary where painted letters cover the walls like protective spells. When Liesl struggles with a word, Hans prompts her to think of Rose's favorite insult, Saumensch, and suddenly reading becomes tied to her new home's rough affection. As her reading improves, she connects personal tragedy to broader horror. The books burned in the town square represent ideas the regime once exterminated, like her parents. Rescuing a book from those flames becomes resistance. Her friendship with Rudy Steiner, the boy who painted himself black to emulate Jesse Owens, teaches her defiance can be joyful. Her relationship with Max Vandenberg, the Jewish man hidden in their basement, shows her stories create bridges between people the world insists must be enemies. Hitler rose to power through language, transforming neighbors into vermin and making extermination thinkable. Death observes that the Führer decided he would rule the world with words. Book burnings weren't symbolic, they were strategic attacks on alternative narratives. Liesl's thievery becomes her counterstrike. Her second stolen book, plucked from Nazi flames, carries the fire's heat like a battle scar. When Max arrives with Hitler's autobiography as disguise, he later paints over those pages, covering hatred with illustrated stories, overwriting propaganda with human connection. The basement literacy lessons reveal language's power to bridge isolated experiences. When Max asks Liesl to describe the sky he cannot see, her words inspire him to paint two figures walking a tightrope toward the sun. Liesl finds her voice through writing. After witnessing emaciated Jews march to Dachau, she begins composing her life story. "I have hated the words and I have loved them, and I hope I have made them right," she writes. This act saves her life. She's in the basement writing when bombs destroy Himmel Street. Max's fable, The Word Shaker, imagines a girl whose tear grows into a tree too strong for the Führer's axemen to fell. Authentic human connection withstanding violent propaganda. Hans Huberman doesn't look like a hero. With his weathered face, rolled cigarettes, and silver eyes made of kindness, he's easy to overlook, which makes his quiet resistance so powerful. In World War I, Jewish soldier Eric Vandenberg volunteered him for letter-writing duty while their unit marched to death. Eric's accordion becomes Hans's inheritance and moral compass. Years later, when Eric's son Max needs shelter, Hans doesn't hesitate. A promise is a promise. The accordion becomes the novel's heartbeat, its squeeze and wheeze announcing safety during Liesl's nightmares. Hans's most dangerous act comes when he offers bread to a starving Jewish prisoner, witnessed by Nazi officials, resulting in his conscription into a bomb cleanup unit. Max Vandenberg arrives hunted, starving, desperate. His basement confinement transforms the Huberman's home into both sanctuary and powder keg. Max paints over Mein Kampf pages to create illustrated stories, reclaiming Hitler's words for beauty. His fantasy of boxing Hitler represents his need to fight back, if only in imagination. Max and Liesl bond through small acts of defiance. She becomes his weather reporter, describing skies he cannot see. When she spots Max among Jews marching to Dachau, their brief, dangerous reunion shows how shared resistance sustains them. The epilogue reveals Max survives, a rare moment proving some promises outlast even genocide. Rudi Steiner, with hair the color of lemons, embodies pure vitality in a world designed to crush it. Inspired by Jesse Owens' Olympic victories, young Rudi covers himself in charcoal and races around the local track. When his father catches him, the conversation reveals Nazi Germany's dangerous contradictions. You can't go around painting yourself black, not because admiring Owens is wrong, but because they'll take you away. This rebellious streak defines Rudi throughout. He deliberately gives wrong answers about the Führer's birthday, masterminds food-stealing schemes, and helps Liesl distribute bread to marching Jews. Each act represents small-scale resistance against a regime that would eventually draft his father and target Rudi for a special Nazi school. When he rescues Liesl's book from the icy Amper River, he again asks for his kiss. Death tells us, he must have loved her so incredibly hard. The tragedy lies in Death's early revelation that Rudi will die before receiving Liesl's kiss. After bombs destroy Himmel Street, Liesl finds Rudy's body and finally kisses his lips, tasting dusty and sweet. His repeated request, "How about a kiss, Salmensch?" always met with Liesl's refusal until it's too late, teaches us that some gifts should never be postponed. The bombing of Himmel Street arrives without warning. Liesl is in the basement writing when bombs flatten her neighborhood, killing everyone she loves. Death collects each soul with careful attention. Frau Holzapfel in her kitchen, the Steiners in their beds, Hans, whose soul was the best one, Rosa, mid-snore with her heart bigger than people knew. These portraits remind us that mass casualties consist of individual lives, each worthy of remembrance. Yet, amid devastation, hope emerges. The mayor and Ilse take in Liesl. Most significantly, Max Vandenberg returns in October 1945, thin and weathered but alive. Their reunion proves life continues after unimaginable loss. Liesl eventually moves to Sydney, builds a new life, and dies as an old woman surrounded by loved ones. Death, who has carried her book for decades, finally returns it as he collects her soul. When she asks if he understood her story, he can only offer, "I am haunted by humans." This confession inverts expectations. Instead of humans fearing death, death stands in awe of human resilience. Liesl's journey from traumatized child to book thief to author proves that even in history's darkest chapter, words retain their power to preserve what bombs destroy.